Chapter 6 Art Investment as Fraud. Helga Achenbach and the Aldi Connection. The art consultant Helga Achenbach always liked something extra, something more. Bigger was better. He didn't drive any ordinary car, but rather the Bentley that had belonged to Josef Beuys. And not just that one Bentley, but four or five more. Likewise, he didn't fly first class, but took private jets. He rented extra-large spaces for the artist Gerhard Richter so that he could paint especially big pictures. And his fee for negotiating the purchase of a single painting by Pablo Picasso would yield him not just the approximately 180,000 euros that his contract specified, but another 2 million euros he took secretly. In the end, Helga Achenbach's prison cell was just 10 square meters, the same as any other prisoner's. The story of Helga Achenbach is the story of a hustler from the West German provinces who grew up in petit bourgeois circumstances and who, as the self-declared first art consultant in Germany, powered the rise of this business in Düsseldorf, the West German city that, at the time, was the city of artists. Achenbach is the paradigmatic figure of the commercialization of art at the end of the 20th century. To be sure, the sale of art had been pursued as a profitable business, often using dubious methods for centuries. But in West Germany, starting in the 1970s, art became a status symbol for large companies and their managers. Art advisors sold these companies and their chairpersons works of art to confer some sort of social meaning, and the art that was sold included important work, along with very insignificant work. It was important, as the art scholar Wolfgang Ulrich has pointed out, that modern art could be described to these corporate officers with the same adjectives that were to be found in job descriptions for managers. The pictures were said to be dynamic, open, creative, innovative, courageous, and resolute. And Helga Achenbach conducted the sale of art by following American models for management consulting, resolutely and dynamically. He celebrated his life in an autobiography published in 1995, which was mainly intended as a marketing vehicle. The book carried the title From Saul to Paul, referring to the instantaneous conversion of the apostle. His next autobiography appeared 20 years later, a large format book complete with a headshot of Achenbach on the cover, depicting him as a successful yet serious man, with a reckless tilt to his mouth. The title this time was Helga Achenbach, the art agitator on collecting and hunting. Only in his third autobiography, which appeared in the fall of 2019 under the title Self-Destruction, did he self-critically label himself a dealer and a junkie. Achenbach liked to tell people that he sold his first pictures while still a schoolboy. A friend encouraged him to cut out photographs from his father's porn magazines on the sly, and then they would sell them together or rent them out. 10 Pfennig for a look, a German mark for the purchase of a color photo. According to another anecdote, as an 18-year-old on a trip to France, he talked down the price of carved ebony figures to a fraction of the street market price, and then resold the statues in Geneva for several times as much. His pride in making a big profit is a constant theme in his stories, even today. Achenbach studied social science, specializing in pedagogy, did his required internship at a prison, and toyed with the idea of emigrating to Chile, then ruled by the socialist Salvador Allende. But after General Augusto Pinochet came to power in the South American country, Achenbach started work in a gallery in Düsseldorf. He had been drawn to artists during his studies. He liked their freedom, the libertinage, the pretty women, the bars, and the feeling of celebration. But he wanted to earn money, too. The job in the gallery soon proved to be too rigid for Achenbach. Having to show up for work every day became a burden, and he wanted to make bigger leaps. And so he designated himself an art advisor, driving like a door-to-door salesman from one big construction project to the next, trying to persuade entrepreneurs to buy art with his informed semi-expertise, as he described it. Persuading people was Achenbach's métier. the social climber, and corruption. In 1977, Achenbach founded the first German art advisory firm, together with the architect Horst Kimmerich, who was knowledgeable about art. Achenbach understood that works of art had become objects of prestige, but that knowledge about art was not something that was associated with a fee. That's where he saw his chance. For 30,000 Deutschmarks, he bought an expensive car telephone weighing several kilograms and eagerly built up his networks. Achenbach seemed to have a gift for making friends, and for doing so in moneyed circles that were usually thought to be insular. Kaspar Koenig, the former director of the Museum Ludwig in Cologne, describes how Achenbach needed only a couple of hours with business leaders who were completely uninterested in art and previously unknown to him, and they were transformed into new collectors. Soon the former social sciences student was wearing hand-tailored three-piece suits and mingling with bankers, managers of insurance companies, and famous artists. He considered Gerhard Richter, Jörg Immendorf, Günther Oecker, and later the photographer Andreas Gursky to be his friends, and he got commissions for them from the business world. Some artists, almost exclusively men, earned good money through him. Others didn't like what he was doing. For many, the rise of art dealers sounded the death knell for traditional collecting, the kind driven by passion. Art dealers and gallerists still complain today that the new type of art collectors, which are handled by advisors, are most interested in art as an investment. They prefer the profits to be guaranteed. And Achenbach was completely comfortable talking about how much the value of the work he was selling by his artist friends would grow. Shortly after founding what was advertised as the first art advising company in Europe, he liked to promote the illusion of a booming business and had friends call him during client meetings in order to create the impression of being in high demand. The tricks worked. He negotiated the commission of two gigantic, colorful abstract paintings by Gerhard Richter for the Victoria Insurance Company, which now belongs to the Ergo Group. Other clients include the corporate giants Allianz, Audi, Hypo Finanzbank, and Deutsche Telekom. Along with New York in the 1980s, the German Rhineland became the international epicenter of the booming art market. It was a bonanza for contemporary art, and Achenbach was the most successful gold miner in Dusseldorf, said a person who has known Achenbach a long time, and, like others in his orbit, spoke about Helga only under the condition of anonymity. Gerhard Richter has publicly called Achenbach a swindler. He was a go-getter and uninhibited marketer of art, said another person who often had occasion to see him in Dusseldorf. Achenbach had also put together a few art projects with the artist Thomas Struth. He has a lot of ambition. He is a seducer and enjoys being influential, Struth said later. Achenbach is also a seducer in his private life. Today he summarizes his love life thusly. I have 8 children by 4 women. I love my children above all, and have loved each of my wives intensely. On the other hand, I wasn't always faithful. I paid women for sex. Affairs? Yes, a few. As he reports in his 2019 book, Self-Destruction, Achenbach quickly became immersed in corruption. In order to be allowed to decorate the headquarters of a large firm with art, he had to pay 10% of the high 6-figure contracted commission to the wife of one of the principal managers of the firm. This story cannot be verified. No names are given. According to Achenbach, for art transactions made in the name of their corporations, executives demanded pictures by famous artists for their private collections as a bonus. He claimed to have paid for the wedding of a curator. As business grew, Achenbach's empire expanded. He opened offices in Munich, Heidelberg, Bonn, Frankfurt, Hamburg, Berlin, and Leipzig. He founded a network of companies. He administered his businesses through AKB GmbH, which in turn belonged to Achenbach Beteiligungs GmbH. Many of his employees were also employed by AAC Leasing und Verwaltungsgesellschaft MBH. In 2006, Achenbach founded State of the Art AG, of which he owned 82% of the stock. After his first forays into gastronomy in the 1970s, in 2002 the art entrepreneur established a beach club and afterwards three restaurants that were named after the Jörg Immendorf monkey sculptures displayed in each, Monkeys East, Monkeys West, and Monkeys South, and which incurred grotesquely high financial losses. The motivation was obviously not to make money from the restaurants, but rather to build a stage on which one could present oneself with actors and artists, bosses of industry and politicians, soccer players, and pretty young women. Achenbach was up for just about anything. Together with one of the largest candy companies, he organized so-called black dinners at which dishes were plated on licorice. These celebrity events in the monkeys' restaurants made such a lasting impression on at least one billionaire couple that they soon placed enormous sums of money at Achenbach's disposal to buy art for them. Achenbach sought to hobnob with the big players in business, sports, and politics. He counted as a friend Gerhard Schröder, the Socialist Party of Germany SPD politician, who later became the federal chancellor. And curators sought him out, because this powerfully built man radiated a nimbus of seemingly inexhaustible sources of money. He could generate contributions for exhibitions or negotiate with people to have art lent for a show. He collaborated with some of the busiest people in the museum world, such as Martin Roth, Hans Ulrich Obrist, and Klaus Biesenbach. Biesenbach was involved with what remains to this day one of the biggest spectacles that Achenbach staged. In order to portray Volkswagen as a progressive company, Achenbach organized a well-funded partnership between the car maker and the Museum of Modern Art, MoMA, in New York. Martin Winterkorn, the VW chairman, justified the partnership in an interview with Biesenbach, the German MoMA curator, for the German weekly Sunday newspaper Welt am Sonntag, when the partnership began. For us, it is interesting for contemporary artists to engage with the great social and political questions of our time. Environmental protection, social justice, equal opportunity, to name only a few. His company, he said, was focused on the question of how to really change the world, and that's why they built environmentally friendly cars in efficient factories. 8 years later, Winterkorn would be indicted because of his role in Volkswagen's fraudulent non-compliance with environmental regulations for auto exhaust. But at the time, the VW sponsorship in New York was hugely celebrated. German journalists were flown business class to New York. Madonna came to dinner, along with Yoko Ono, Lou Reed, Patti Smith, and Salman Rushdie. James Franco acted as DJ, and Winterkorn drove up in an experimental 1-liter car with the actress Lucy Liu. The German magazine Bunte reported, "A breathtaking performance by the young Korean violin virtuoso Han Bin." Sex and the City star Kim Cattrall chatted easily with starchitect Richard Meyer and art advisor Helga Achenbach, who had threaded the needle of the connection between culture and industry. Glenn D. Lowry, the director of MoMA, said later, "Helga is an exuberant person full of ideas. Some are crazy, others brilliant. I don't know exactly how he does it, but he seems to be able to do great things." Achenbach was happy. He placed this quotation by the museum director, for whom he had raised millions of dollars from the German auto industry, in big red letters at the beginning of his Art Agitator biography. Forged invoices for Kokoschka, Picasso, and Liechtenstein. In the end, Achenbach was felled neither by the debt-ridden restaurants, nor by the extensive parties, nor by his regular visits to a female escort, but rather by business with his best clients. He must have thought he had a white whale on the end of his harpoon at the end of the 2000s, a single client from whom he could take more than all his earlier customers, someone who could make him even richer. This person was Bertolt Albrecht, born in Essen, Germany in 1954, the son of Theo Albrecht, one of the two founders of the supermarket chain Aldi. The Albrechts had been considered for decades to be among the richest and also the most discreet billionaires in Germany. Achenbach had come to know this son of the Aldi Nord family and his wife Babette Albrecht at a private dinner given by mutual friends. The friendship grew slowly. They would meet for a casual dinner at an Italian restaurant or at one of the monkeys' restaurants. At last, at the end of 2008, Achenbach was assigned to invest about 60 million euros in an art collection. Babette Albrecht explained later that her husband wanted to invest money in art because the interest rates at banks weren't profitable anymore. And a stock is a stock. At least you can look at art. Like the rest of his family, Berthold Albrecht had until then led a very reserved life. He was afraid that in buying art he would be charged inflated prices if galleries learned that an Aldi heir was the customer. The couple didn't want to pay some kind of Albrecht surcharge, his wife Babette said later, when a court conducted proceedings regarding the former friendship. Their friend Helga Achenbach was supposed to serve as an agent who could discover really good art while being discreet about his client's identity in order to secure proper market pricing. An advisory honorarium of 5% of the sales price was agreed upon in return for this service, a portion that Achenbach later claimed was much too small to cover the costs of his efforts. Normally, dealers or advisors comfortably take 10% or more for their services and art acquisitions. But, of course, most often the amount of money involved is less than it was in the case of the Albrechts. The art purchases by the Aldi heirs achieved an order of magnitude rarely seen in Germany. According to the Art Market Report of the Art Basel Fair, German activity accounted for only 1% of the estimated $67 billion world art market in 2018. Achenbach had won an extremely promising client. Considering the domestic market conditions, and despite his lower percentage take on purchases, he could have earned 3 million euros on the 60 million euros allotted. But that was, of course, too little for him. Much too little. For the very first purchase, he arranged on behalf of Berthold Albrecht a painting of London's Tower Bridge by Oskar Kokoschka. Achenbach simply falsified the invoice from the Marlborough Gallery in London. Using a photocopier, he doctored the price he negotiated, changing $800,000 to $950,000. He also switched the dollar sign for a euro sign, which, according to the exchange rates at the time, increased the profit by yet another 200,000 euros. Correspondingly, all other charges increased according to the percentages, the size of the commission, the value-added tax. Not only had Achenbach calculated the 5% for his advisory honorarium, a sum that would have been about the same as the average annual salary of a German worker, but by means of the manipulated invoice, he had added more than 50% to the original price. He didn't just double his honorarium, he increased it tenfold. Achenbach didn't have any limits, even in fraud, and from there things happily rolled along. The second art acquisition by the Albrechts in March 2009 was the painting Mother and Son by Ernst Ludwig Kirchner. Achenbach bought it for about 1.3 million euros from the gallerist Michael Werner, while telling Albrecht that the purchase price was 1.8 million euros. With his commission of 5%, now calculated on the inflated price, Achenbach earned more than 500,000 euros in the sale. 1 month later, he bought two more Kirchner paintings from the same dealer and similarly earned, because of his manipulations, about 1 million euros. In June 2009, the Albrechts visited the Art Basel Fair together with Achenbach and bought Picasso's La Famille du Jardinier, 1965, supposedly for 5.5 million euros net from the Richard Gray Gallery of Chicago. In this transaction, Achenbach piled on 2 million euros extra. There were also deals involving pictures by Neo Rauch and Anselm Kiefer, for example, for which Achenbach didn't inflate the price. But there were other transactions involving works by Albert Uhlen, Takashi Murakami, and Francis Picabia, in which he continued to deceive his friends from Essen with imaginary numbers. On the sale of a Roy Lichtenstein painting in spring 2010, he covertly earned 1 million euros. Kaspar König, at the time the director of the Museum Ludwig, also got indirectly involved in this deal. König had connected Achenbach to Liechtenstein's estate for the transaction, which Albrecht repaid by donating 100,000 euros to the museum, and this sum in turn helped to finance a Liechtenstein exhibition. According to his own statements, König knew nothing of the inflated prices from which the art advisor in nearby Düsseldorf was profiting. In the fall of 2010, Berthold Albrecht decided that he had enough art in his house. He would concentrate on buying vintage cars, and once again, Achenbach came to his assistance, and once again profited mightily through his firm State of the Art, by way of hefty commissions and markups. Instead of brand names like Richter, Picasso, and Kirchner, Albrecht collected Bentleys, Bugattis, and Jaguars. In 2011, Achenbach took in more than 1.5 million euros in the 12 million euro purchase of a Mercedes-Benz 540K special roadster. Through Achenbach's efforts in 2012, Albrecht bought a Ferrari 121 LM, with the additional truck to transport it, for more than 11 million euros, of which a good 3 million euros went to the art advisor's firm. Art as an investment class. The Aldi heir wasn't the only victim of Achenbach's fraudulent practices. Always eager to expand, Achenbach had, together with the private bank Berenberg in Hamburg, established an art advisory firm for the bank's clients, Berenberg Art Advice, GmbH. Besides Achenbach, a former employee of an important German art insurance company was supposed to assist. As a leading insurance manager, the man had for years had access to confidential private collections and the storerooms of art dealers, and thus had amassed an enormously valuable reservoir of knowledge of the whereabouts of masterworks. He became Achenbach's business partner. The bank owned 51% of the art advisory company, Achenbach 39%, and the former insurance executive 10%. A few years later, he shared the defendant's table with Achenbach in the district court in Essen. The firm went live in 2011, as those involved appeared in various media, just as Achenbach's art consulting firm had introduced the business culture into the art world. Now art would become an instrument of finance. More and more private investors would become interested in putting money into this investment class, as a representative of the bank was quoted in a press release. From our long-term strategic perspective, investments in art contribute positively to diversification of total assets. Interestingly enough, Helga Achenbach was cited explicitly in this press release with a warning about inflated prices. An artist is always overpriced if a group of dealers and collectors team up, agree, and possibly even artificially drive up the auction prices. The bank representative commented further that the goal of Berenberg Art Advice was to protect buyers of art. The new firm would provide its clients with the requisite transparency in the art market, and also the greatest possible discretion. That they were inviting the fox into the chicken coop had apparently not occurred to the bankers at Berenberg. In November 2012, an art fund was also established, the Berenberg Art Capital Fund. It was supposed to collect 50 million euros from investors to buy up 200 artworks. The works were to be sold after 7 years. The return on investment was estimated at between 7 and 9% per year. The minimum investment in the fund was set at 100,000 euros. In April 2013, an employee of the firm reported that they had already brought in 10 million euros. A few months later, in July 2013, the bank declared that the ambitious project was terminated. There had not been sufficient interest. Dozens of similar art fund projects had already crashed throughout the world, including some whose model can be described more appropriately as fraud than a legitimate investment vehicle. Art funds fell apart mostly because of too little financial expertise or insufficient knowledge of art. At the time, the investment specialist at this private bank, Jürgen Reker, explained that the demise of the Berenberg Fund was due to the way the art market was constituted. The banker, as the principal of Berenberg Private Capital, GmbH, had been involved in investments in tangible assets, from real estate and parking garages to farmland and forests. But he had worked his way into the art market. Art differentiated itself from these other markets by its deep opacity, the quite unequal distribution of information, and the very limited number of players. An inside deal is not forbidden in the art market. The prices at public auctions can be easily manipulated by representatives of the artist. "It's another world that's already partially suspect," Reka said after the termination of the art fund. The practices of the art market were said to be as secretive as those of the diamond market, though one could agree relatively easily on the value of a diamond. It wasn't just the opacity of the art market that made the arena so difficult for the fund manager, but also the complicated questions regarding the fictive value of art. The symbolic capital of art and of buying art must always be factored into the record prices at the auction houses. Placing the winning bid for a certain work of art is meant to demonstrate membership in an elite class, or to distinguish oneself within this elite class. Anyone who simply buys a share in an investment fund, and not the Picasso painting itself, cannot profit from this symbolic capital or receive, obviously, what bankers call the emotional profit, the experience that someone has in looking at art. In 2013, Berenberg Bank closed the art fund along with the firm Berenberg Art Advice, which had been established with Achenbach and the former insurance executive, and was supposed to shepherd wealthy clients through art transactions. Achenbach said later that they had gotten hardly any clients. The returns had been much less than planned. But there was another reason for the end to these dreams of huge profits, a reason that was best kept secret. The pharmaceutical entrepreneur and the art of writing false invoices. One of the few big clients for the Berenberg Art Advisory was the pharmaceutical entrepreneur Christian Berenger. The chairman of the board of the traditional firm Berenger Ingelheim had just begun collecting works with the theme of the art of writing and now wished to be advised professionally. He became acquainted with Helga Achenbach at the European Fine Art Fair, TEFAF, in Maastricht in 2012. Achenbach discussed the concept of the collection with him and assisted him in the purchase of a Gerhard Richter painting, Untitled Green. They entered into an agreement in September 2012. Berenger wanted to invest 1.5 million euros in art annually. Already that September, Achenbach bought Tracy Emin's I Can't Believe How Much I Loved You for the pharmaceutical mogul and dutifully calculated his commission at the agreed-upon 5%. Of course, for later purchases, works by Lawrence Wiener, Alighiero Boetti, and Andreas Gursky, Achenbach proceeded as he had with Albrecht, the Aldi heir. He secretly added extra high profits to the price and forged the gallery's invoices. Since the transactions of the Berenberg Art Advice would be monitored by the bank, he had the purchases first run through his own art advisory in order to pass on the forged invoices to the bank. Nonetheless, in the end, one of the inflated transactions with Berenger saw the light of day. In another case, meanwhile, an early work by Georg Baselitz had been offered for 875,000 euros to a business couple from the Lower Saxony area of Germany, longtime clients of Berenberg Bank. Achenbach and the former insurance executive had bought it for 200,000 euros from a well-known photographer in Cologne, an old friend of the artist. As later revealed in the court proceedings concerning the Achenbach case, the couple's purchase was also motivated by tax reasons. The painting was to be given to a son. Artworks are exempted under certain conditions from gift taxes. There was a payment, but the deal did not come to fruition, and all other transactions at Berenberg Art Advice suddenly came to an end. Not, or rather not just, because the fund didn't attract enough clients, as was publicly stated. The bank had received a tip and hit the brakes. An independent contractor who worked for Achenbach, Thomas Kellein, who had earlier served as the director of various exhibition spaces in Switzerland, Germany, and the U.S., enlightened Berenberg in June 2013 about the fraudulent practices using undisclosed profit margins. He had himself been paid a bonus in the amount of 200,000 euros by Achenbach for the sale of an artwork at an inflated price. Now, however, he made the bank aware of the strange goings-on in the sale of the early Baselitz work, repaid his bonus, and got hold of the original invoice from the Marion Goodman Gallery in New York, through which Achenbach had acquired artworks by Lawrence Wiener for Christian Boehringer. The collaborator had turned into a whistleblower. Under the pretext that it wanted to make a short advertising film with Achenbach and his co-worker, the Berenberg Bank enticed the two to come to its headquarters in Hamburg. While separated, each of them was confronted with the accusations made by the independent contractor. Achenbach admitted the concealed profit margins in the Boehringer case. The former insurance executive disputed the facts. Both had to forfeit their ownership interest in Berenberg Art Advice that day. A notary, who was present for the occasion, supervised the termination of the firm that had been founded 2 years earlier out of concern for more transparency and protection in the art market. From first class into a prison cell. The bank and Achenbach indemnified Christian Boehringer. The incomplete transaction involving the Baselitz painting and the business couple from Lower Saxony was reversed, quietly and discreetly, as is the custom in private banking, in order to protect the reputations of vastly wealthy clients. Life rode along nicely for Helga Achenbach. In December 2013, this man, who had taken millions from his friend Berthold Albrecht, who had died the year before, was swimming in a pool at a jet ski resort, when a woman spoke to him, according to his own account. She was active on behalf of the Munich entrepreneurs, who were at the time planning the Campo Bahia, the hotel in Brazil that would host the German national soccer team. Achenbach was entirely in his element here, as he related in his most recent autobiography. He immediately met with the industrialists and, just a few weeks later, was outfitting Campo Bahia with works by Brazilian and German artists like Andreas Gursky and Klaus Föttinger. But Achenbach was unable to join the celebration in the stadium when the German team won the world championship, as he had planned to do. Instead, he had to watch it on the television at the penitentiary in Essen, Germany. Early in the morning on June 10, 2014, Helga Achenbach and his wife landed at the airport in Düsseldorf. They were coming from a 3-day celebration in Washington, D.C., and had flown overnight in first class to Frankfurt and changed planes to Düsseldorf there. When they left the plane in Düsseldorf, Achenbach was approached by two men who spoke to him, showed him the arrest warrant, and took him into custody. Achenbach reported that, at first, he thought it was a mistake. But this time the problem wasn't solved quite so easily and quickly, as so many other problems had been for this native of the Rhineland. The police had investigated the deception of Berthold and Babette Albrecht for weeks. In the dissolution of the Berenberg Art Advice, the bank had found on a computer a list with many other artworks for which dramatically different prices were recorded. The bank informed the Albrecht family, which filed criminal charges following its own investigation, and the case played itself out. Achenbach's telephone was bugged, witnesses were questioned, and finally the arrest warrant was issued. The photo of him on the cover of the autobiography Art Agitator, published a year earlier, resembles a mugshot. Certain sentences in this autobiography read as particularly mendacious. "I always wanted to make the system more transparent," Achenbach wrote in 2013, after he had forged invoices and swindled millions of euros. "From the beginning, it was my desire to protect the collectors and firms that I advise from the extremes of a quickly moving art market." He wrote that he felt a bit like a pilot who steers his clients through the dangerous waters of the market to safety. "We have to protect art from the market so that our society again senses its power." Achenbach was held in pretrial detention and occupied a cell on the same floor of the Essen prison where Thomas Middelhoff, the former manager of Bertelsmann, would serve his sentence for embezzlement and tax evasion in November 2014. two of the biggest movers and shakers in Germany, who eschewed commercial air travel to fly by private jet, as Achenbach favored, or commuted to work by helicopter, as Middelhoff did when traffic was bad, were now singing in the prison choir. Middelhoff as a baritone, and Achenbach, by his own account, as a bass. The trial. At the same defendant's table, in the appropriately large and high-ceilinged room 101 of the Essen District Court, where Thomas Middelhoff had already been found guilty, Helga Achenbach sat for numerous days of proceedings. The room, outfitted in pale wood, was the light-filled stage for a trial that played like a gripping television series about the dark side of the art market, an epic about money and pretty pictures, friendship and deception, famous artists and the richest of the rich. But above all else, it was about the rise and fall of the chief defendant, Helga Achenbach. Each day of the trial was a different episode, with new twists and more suspicious facts. At the front of the room, three judges reigned, along with two jurors and one court reporter. Helga Achenbach and his co-defendant and ex-partner, the former insurance executive, sat with their four lawyers at the defendant's table. Across from them, all by herself, the young prosecutor, Valeria Sonntag. At the start of the proceedings on December 9, 2014, Helga Achenbach entered the courtroom looking pale, almost reserved. The art advisor had lost several kilos in custody, which was why his fitted suit ballooned around his belly. His co-defendant continued to dispute every accusation. He had not been part of an illegal business. Achenbach, by contrast, whose defense strategy was unknown until then, announced that a complete explanation would be given on the second day of the trial. His defense attorney, Thomas Elsner, sketched his line of argument in a brief statement to the court. Helga Achenbach had not engaged in fraud because even the prices with inflated profit margins corresponded to the market worth of the artworks or fell under the market value. Furthermore, his expenses were not covered by the commissions. Allegedly, the art advisor had given Albrecht, as the buyer, a very generous return warranty. The billionaire could return the works within either 5 or 7 years, as the case may be, for the full purchase price. In addition, Achenbach claimed to have promised to pay interest of 4% per annum in the event of a return. Even though Albrecht's legatees disputed the existence of this return guarantee, which the judges also didn't believe existed, it showed something symptomatic about Achenbach's case that was also true in general for the art market, which had been running wild for years. In what other markets could such interest rates be guaranteed for half a decade? Could one guarantee a continuing boom in the art market? With these guarantees, if indeed they existed, Achenbach had driven some wealthy people to have fantastical expectations about the profitability of investing in art. Art wasn't allowed to be just art anymore. It was the perfect investment vehicle, because, in his opinion, Achenbach had more than fulfilled the responsibilities of an investment advisor. He had approved the high profit margins, margins that are entirely common in the all-too-discreet and, compared with other investment markets, unregulated art market. In the second episode of this art crime drama series, which is to say on the second day of the trial, the art advisor admitted to sometimes charging not just the agreed-upon 3 or 5% commission on the purchase of artworks or vintage cars, but additional, hidden high margins. He admitted to doctoring invoices from galleries and brazenly called them collages, as if he were himself an artist, as if his fraud wasn't really fraud, but somehow an ingenious creative artwork. The chief judge, Johannes Hidding, was the star of the trial. Not because he made grand gestures or the like, the young judge was, in fact, quite reserved and polite. With relentlessness and concentration, he simply posed the right questions, pursuing suspected fraud, shedding light on the peculiarities of the global art market, and the market in the German Rhineland in particular. He couldn't be accused of bias. He always interrogated the witnesses impartially, some of them for hours at a time. Judge Hidding, was as proper as his severely parted hair. "How exactly does it work with editions of photographs by Andreas Gursky?" he asked one witness, one of the most powerful gallerists in Germany. At the beginning of the trial, because of the banality of the questioning, one had the impression that this judge was perhaps not especially well-versed in the art market. The opposite quickly proved to be true. Hidding and his fellow judges had studied up on the smallest details of the case. They were constantly chasing after incriminating or exculpatory facts. They tried to contextualize the events in the logic of the art market, and they exposed, whether intentionally or not, the absurdities of the system. For instance, there was that problem with the editions of the Gursky photographs. Again and again, Hidding interrogated the gallerist, and earlier the two defendants, about the circumstances under which edition 2 of 6 of an untitled photo series by Gursky was sold. In the photograph, one sees pages from Robert Musil's novel Man Without Qualities, but the photos are worked and collaged in such a way that important sentences by Musil appear in a new context. The judges noted not only that edition 2 was sold to Boehringer for an inflated price, but also that the same number in the series was hanging in the collection of a museum in Sydney, according to the museum. Had Andreas Gursky sold his supposedly strictly limited edition twice? The gallerist was able to explain that a different edition number was hanging in the Sydney Museum, and there had simply been a bit of confusion. But the answers to Judge Hidding's questions unveiled the absurd system in which the supply of a photograph, a medium that in reality is infinitely reproducible, is artificially restricted in order to create high prices. The spectators also learned that for Gursky, as for many other photographers, in addition to the strictly limited editions, there were exhibition copies which, unlike the completely identical prints made for sale, were simply thrown away after they had served their purpose in the exhibition, and that individual prints could be converted quickly into exhibition copies. They have no value, have no insurance costs, and can be easily transported. The gallerist admitted that all this was difficult to understand. Although Albrecht, through Achenbach, had bought over 120 million euros worth of art and vintage cars between 2009 and 2011, there was no written agreement about commissions, which could be explained by the friendly relationship between the two men. In fact, oral agreements are today still the rule rather than the exception in the art market. Perhaps this scandal was the inevitable product of recent trends. Here is a market in which, from year to year, ever crazier sums of money are spent, and that nonetheless operates largely without rules. One makes friends quickly in the art scene, the widow of the victim Berthold Albrecht affirmed during her hours of interrogation. The longer the trial lasted, the more the defendant's network appeared to be deeply enmeshed in the elite of the international art market. It emerged, for example, that at Achenbach's instigation, the director of the venerable Albertina Museum in Vienna, Klaus Albrecht Schroeder, escorted the Aldi heirs for hours through the Art Basel fair. In the end, he advised them to purchase a painting by Francis Picabia, and thereby placed himself, as the leader of a public institution, in the service of private collectors and dealers and their commercial interests. In response to an inquiry, Schroeder explained that such a guided tour is part of the educational responsibility of a museum director, and he had received nothing in return. Everybody in the art market is connected to everybody else, the trial's spectators learned, and even the rich seem to be indebted to others. Achenbach's collaborator, a banker, and many others allegedly owed Achenbach money, as was revealed in the course of the trial. Later, Achenbach's businesses, Achenbach Art Advisory, State of the Art, and the Monkeys Restaurants he had founded were placed in bankruptcy. More than 100 creditors had sent notices to Marc Devoine, the bankruptcy administrator for the 10 Achenbach enterprises in the district court. He estimated the total of the demands at between 40 million euros and 50 million euros. Devoine was supposed to auction off 2,300 artworks held in the storerooms of the Achenbach firms in the same year. Even the bankruptcy administrator expressed shock at the business practices of the art market. Missing invoices, oral agreements, and demands by shady galleries in Switzerland. He said he had to find terra firma first. Three associate lawyers and a bookkeeper were supposed to assist him in the undertaking. With each day of the trial, the spectators dove ever deeper into the material and came to think eventually that they knew the principles quite well. And then they would be surprised by new evidence and new connections. Each week, a group of mostly out-of-town journalists waited with bated breath for the new players that would testify as witnesses. The artist Tony Cragg, for example, or the former museum director Thomas Killein, who had uncovered Achenbach's concealed profit margins. The judgment. Even the super-rich are not fair game. The fortunes of the well-to-do people are just as protected by the laws as those who earn a normal salary. Thus, Judge Johannes Hidding justified his judgment against Helga Achenbach and his former collaborator on March 16, 2015. Achenbach was sentenced to a total of 6 years' imprisonment for 18 counts of fraud, in part in connection with embezzlement, as well as another count of attempted fraud. His former partner, whose lawyer had pled his innocence and asked for an acquittal, was sentenced to a year's imprisonment and 3 months' probation. As an aggravating factor, the court found that Achenbach had exploited his friendship with Albrecht, the reclusive billionaire. That Achenbach had partially confessed was an alleviating factor in the sentencing. But he was condemned for other deals with vintage cars whose propriety he constantly defended during the trial. Achenbach takes risks, was how Judge Hidding characterized the condemned. He pointed, among other things, to the debts that Achenbach's Monkey's restaurants were running up, a business that Achenbach didn't have a handle on, but where all the ill-gotten gains had ended up remained a mystery, even after the trial was over. There would follow other judgments against Achenbach in civil trials. In June 2017, the district court in Düsseldorf ordered the convicted fraudster to pay 18 million euros to the legatees of Berthold Albrecht. The appellate court lowered the payment to 16.2 million euros, but affirmed the judgment. A member of the Fiehoff family, which had established the Rheingold collection with Achenbach, a collection which was supposed to be shown in museums and sold off at the earliest 20 years later, accused Achenbach of irregularities in art sales. After Achenbach's arrest, the Rheingold collection was divided up and liquidated. The auctions of the approximately 2,300 artworks from Achenbach's storerooms established a record on behalf of the auction house Van Ham for the biggest sale of contemporary art in Germany and brought in altogether about 10 million euros for the creditors of the insolvent firms. A large sum, but, of course, only a fraction of the outstanding debt. In 2019, Achenbach complained that many of the artworks were sold well under their estimated values. They could have made 25 million euros, he pompously claimed. A new beginning for a narcissist. In June 2018, Helga Achenbach was released early on probation. In prison, not only had he sung in the prison choir, but he had also taken painting classes, a hobby that he sought to turn professional after his release. Achenbach's paintings can be found on Instagram, studies of the sky, sea, or mountains, most executed in various gradations of a single color. One could describe the style as post-impressionism. Many of the pictures are titled, with little ambiguity, Spirit of Freedom. Together with the nonprofit Culture Without Borders, Achenbach wants to create a refugee center for politically persecuted artists at an old farm near Düsseldorf. His friend, the architect David Chipperfield, has already drawn the plans for the annex. Achenbach himself moved into a top-floor apartment in Cologne that the journalist and author Günther Wallraff put at his disposal. Until he repays the millions of euros that he owes, the former millionaire is allowed to keep only a modest monthly income out of the revenues from his activities. The rest is garnished. And still, Helga Achenbach, who describes himself as a narcissist, dreams of big business. He spoke to the German magazine Stern in September 2019 about a potential big deal in Mallorca that involved transforming a sheikh's estate into a sculpture park. Achenbach seems to be looking for big deals in his old trade. To be sure, his latest autobiography, published in fall 2019, bore the title Self-Destruction, and in it, Achenbach expresses his self-criticism and admits his guilt, though for long stretches it does read like a lengthy, "It wasn't all that bad." In many anecdotes, Achenbach portrays himself as a bold man with the right instincts at the right time. He gleefully recites the alleged increases in the value of artworks that he handled by Gerhard Richter, Yves Klein, or Andy Warhol. He is seemingly forced to recite the profits and increases in unrealized gains from his art deals. For the sales of pictures to the Aldi Albrechts, there is even a table with estimated increases in value. There are always millions in gains, if not billions. He claims that the art he handled in the course of his eventful career is worth 4 or 5 billion euros today. The book reads like a belated defense and the desperate attempt of a disgraced man to find a place again in society. Unrestrained, boastful, narcissistic, all adjectives that Achenbach has applied to himself could also be used to describe the art market. Whoever swims in this shark pool, whether dealer, gallerist, or artist, knows that deception isn't the exception, but the rule, Achenbach writes in his book. He says that there's a culture in the art market that favors cynicism and corruption, which makes any honest people idiots. For decades, Helga Achenbach was one of those who engendered this culture, and he is apparently always ready to jump back in with the other sharks in the pool and give chase. In December 2019, Achenbach announced that he would facilitate the sale of approximately 500 drawings that Gerhard Richter had allegedly abandoned in the Democratic Republic of Germany before he fled to West Germany in 1961. The collection, whose ownership is unclear and has been disputed, has been making the rounds for more than 10 years in the art market. The artist himself emphasized that he doesn't consider those pieces, which could be his work, to be part of his artistic oeuvre.